Just gone 7:20 Central African time, and that time of the morning where we join our very own Adam Kamda, who's overlooking the Indian Ocean from his promenade. He can see people going to and fro, and he's also looking at some people who are coming with the prams and some of the fishing nets. And that net, brother, is too weak. It can only catch butterflies. But Adam Kamda, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Sunday morning?
Wa alaikum salam, Shafad. Yes, well described. The Durban beachfront is a buzz of activity. Lots of people coming down and doing exercise on the promenade, and a lovely warming sun rising above the horizon. The sea is looking a little bumpy today. I saw two boats going out, and it was quite a rough ride. We're expecting northeasterly winds today, so I'm landbound today. I think I'll spend a few hours maintaining my boat today, Shafad.
Absolutely, and your boat is a well-known fixture in the moorings of Durban, and many people, they do worry you, even doctors, teachers, lawyers. I believe the deputy president who was warning you recently to be on your boat. What is so special about your boat that everyone wants to be on Adam's boat, and you're the skipper, Adam?
Yes, Shafad, from a very young age, I had a very strong connection with the ocean, and now that I have my own boat and enjoy fishing deep sea and fishing in the harbor, I love imparting my skills and teaching people about fishing, teaching people about seamanship. So I often take people out, especially if someone hasn't been on a boat before, Shafad. I get real joy and pleasure out of taking people out and giving them that first experience on the water, Shafad.
I tell you, Adam, when I was a lighty, I used to love, making paper aeroplanes and paper boats and putting it into the water, and suddenly the whole thing sunk because made of paper. But, the fascination of boats is something that is inherent with us. And in your case, well, when did that fascination come in? When did you get that innate desire to be a skipper one day, Adam?
Yes, Shafad, from a young age, we used to go to the Durban Harbour and fish from the wharf. We used to be as a family, my parents, my brothers and I, excuse me. And I never really had much aspiration to own a boat because it was really beyond our means. It was only towards the later years of my schooling that my dad purchased a boat. And from day one, Shafad, I took to it like a duck to water. And learned all the rules, learned my way about Durban Harbour. Eventually got my skipper so I could go out to sea. Got my Durban operator certificate so we could operate through the Durban Harbour entrance. And from there, it's been a learning curve, Shafad. I always enjoy picking up new skills and always enjoy studying about the ocean. So I continue to do my sailing skippers, which in the theory is very similar to a power skipper. But you learn so much more about using the wind to propel a yacht, Shafad. And one of my great passions is sailing. And even that, Shafad, I love taking people out on the yacht and showing them, giving them that experience of being on this vessel, switching the engine off, and then you just hear the quiet silence of the hull cutting through the water, and you angle the sails to make this yacht go in any direction you want. And it's quite something to behold, the combination of physics and science with all the forces acting on the sails and on the hull to make a vessel that weighs a few tons to propel itself through the water, like even in light conditions, like between 4 and 6 knots. It's amazing, that you can actually get some speed out of it, even in light breezes, Shafad.
The ancient mariner, I like to go down to the seas again, the lonely seas and skies. And all I ask is for a tall ship and a star to steer her by. I can visualize him. I can feel that yearning of a skipper, the ancient mariner. And he's old. Now he wants to go back to the seas again, to the lonely seas and the skies. Is it that lonely, Adam, when you're out at sea?
Shafad, being out at sea solo is a really special experience. I often go to a company. I always have people on board, but I have made a few solo trips out to sea, and it's something so unique and so special. It's you at one with the ocean, and you are out there alone to gather all your thoughts and to marvel at the creation of our Creator. It's really special. And even sailors have a real affinity towards solo sailing Chapaat. They set up the yachts so that they have autopilot when they need to walk forward to set the sails. And then once everything is set up, they come back to the cockpit area and take over the tiller. And many sailors have done solo voyages around the world, Chapaat. It's really quite a challenge. And my feeling is that that's the pinnacle of sailing. But sailing is also a social sport, and it's also lots of fun to have people on board to share the duties and the functions on the yacht, whether it's skippering or crewing, Chapaat.
But I was talking about sailors. When you talk to them and they tell you, especially on these big vessels, when they're out in the ocean and then they find themselves being dunked, you know, this huge wave comes and the ship goes down and it takes about a minute or two before it, you know, it resurfaces again and they get dunked again deep into the ocean and up and down. You know, what goes through the mind of these sailors? Because we tend to forget that the perils of the sea, you know, these people suffer. Is just unreal. They're away from the family members. They're maybe on 3 or 6 months contracts, and they're going through all these trials and tribulations of the oceans. And another question I'd like to pose to you, is it easier to say sail on the perhaps the Pacific Ocean or the Atlantic Ocean or the Indian Ocean? Which is the easiest ocean to sail on, Adam?
Yes, Chapaat, you know, having a career at sea, being part of a crew on a huge cargo ship, that can be very lonely, and there you are thrown at all types of hazards at sea, whether it be huge windstorms or huge waves, etc. And there you really have to place a lot of faith in the boat construction of your ship. Often you have ships that are huge, like 200 meters long or 300 meters long, and still finding it really difficult to go through these huge mountainous waves that often break over the bow. And I'm sure it's a pretty scary situation because you are thousands of kilometers from land, and you really have to be self-sufficient. You have to trust in the skills of your engineer who can keep the engines running. You've got to trust in the skills of the skipper who knows how to navigate through these huge waves and keep the vessel safe. As you know, the skipper is in charge of the life of all the crew as well as the safety of the vessel. So if there are hectic storm forecasts ahead, they sometimes reroute and take a route that would try and avoid much of the impact of these heavy storms, Chapaat. And in terms of which ocean to sail at to avoid perils, you know, new storms can come up at any time, but with advanced electronic equipment, you can gather a lot of meteorological information and understand where the storms are coming from and where they're heading to. And if you, there's tons of books on sailing around the world, Chapaat. And through reading some of these, you'll come to realize that there are certain seasons for sailing through certain parts of the world. So, for example, it's well documented the monsoon seasons around India, the hurricane seasons around America, etc. And you would choose the exact month in the year to be sailing through those regions to avoid these kind of natural phenomena, Chapaat.
Absolutely brilliant, Adam. And also the question to pose is, you know, who are those captains that are perhaps the best captains of the vessels? And we notice there are many Pakistanis that love becoming seafarers. Your thoughts on, you know, who are the best and why this affinity towards the ocean? Is it a good, well-paying profession? And there's still discrimination the way they say the Britishers are paid more than the others, Adam.
Yes, Chapaat, if you meet a lot of the captains that come, that visit the Durban Harbour, you know, by ship, by cargo ship, etc., you would meet a lot of Pakistanis, a lot of Malaysians. I think for those individuals, becoming a captain of a ship is really a pinnacle of seafaring as well as good monetary rewards. But as you rightly said, skippers from those nationalities generally earn less than from the European counterparts. And these ships are registered internationally, so they can source this, the captains from any country, Shepard. So I think they favor some of these countries where they don't have to pay as much to their captains as they would others, Shepard.
And absolutely, you know, then we get to know the stories of the Pakistanis where they have to pay their, you know, they get their salary. But you'll notice that one captain is up supporting maybe 20 or 30 family members. And, you know, then you get so, you know, you have that empathy, the sympathy for them. And you'll find that, they will open up to you, Adam. They'll tell you, yeah, they'll give you their stories. They'll talk about the family. They'll talk about the daughters. They talk about the son. And sometimes you feel that when you're on board, you become more like a counselor to them. I don't know if you had that experience, Adam.
Yes, Shepard, a lot of these captains, although they are pinnacle of their careers, they come from impoverished backgrounds and real hardships to actually have acquired those skills and to get into that industry. So they often end up traveling the world with a lot of baggage and a lot of problems back home. But I think through the generation, Shepard, they will continue to improve. And as they earn well, they can educate their kids better and they can all have a better lot. So I think it's just a matter of time that, you know, these skippers will come through the generations and their families' circumstances will improve over time, Shepard.
Now, Adam, I'm going to share a story with you. It was many years ago that the Pakistani, you know, Navy ships were here. One of them was the Zulfikar. And, you know, someone phoned me from the South African Navy. And they said, Mr. Khan, you know, there is this ship here. Why don't you go and visit them? So I went to the Navy base. And, you know, while I was going in, and then, you know, the protocols are they had to call the admiral of the ship. And when they phoned him, and I said, I'm Shafaq Khan, and I want to give you a gift. He said, okay, what gift you got for me? I said, no, I've got a noble Quran. He said, listen, I'm very busy, but give me one reason why I should entertain you. So I said, okay, if you can answer this question, then you don't need me on board. I asked him, who was the first captain of the ship? And he's mentioned both in the Quran and the Bible. And he said, oh, okay. I said, Surah 11, verse 41. And he said, oh, okay. Then I said, Bismillahi mujriha mursaha inna rabbika la ghafur rahim. May its yearning and be in the name of Allah. Verily, Allah is all forgiving, most merciful. Guess what, Adam? He said, please come immediately. And I went and met him. And there were all these other captains and, you know, the different social, or you get that different hierarchy on board. Everyone embraced me, celebrated me. They treated me like royalty. And guess what, Adam? They flew me around Durban Harbour on the helicopter. And that was the treatment I got. In the evening, I had that on board also. So, Adam, you know, the barakah of ayat of the Noble Quran, just like, you know, you ask who was the first captain of the ship. And it's you could do it with your Christian friends and your non-Muslim. They said, Nuh alayhi salam, this is the dua he read when he sailed his vessel. Adam, your comments?
Yes, Shepard, it's really amazing how much of the ocean and seafaring is actually mentioned in the Quran. And I also want to share with listeners, Shepard, that when you're out there at sea, you know, you realize that you are totally at the mercy of Allah. And especially when weather conditions change and you think you are this big shot skipper on your own vessel and you are in charge and you can control everything. And then you realize, you know what, you're so far from land and the wind is picking up and the sea is getting rough. And how are you going to make it back to shore? And it becomes a really spiritual connection between you and your maker. And you pray to Allah, you know what, please, let me return to land safely, please. I've got all these people on board. I'm in charge of their safety. And Allah, please guide us and make it easy for us. And you really, really end up developing this bond and this real connection. And if ever you committed any sins or anything, you ask for forgiveness and you want to, you know, you want to get back to land and get back to your families, etc. So being at sea and having this connection with your maker is really at one. And as you mentioned, there's so many instances of seafaring that is mentioned in the Holy Quran. And I think we should pick up the Quran and read more and understand more and try and find these connections between our lives, the ocean, and the Quran, Shafat.
Absolutely. And Yunus alayhi salam, in the belly of the whale, hey, how big that whale was and you know, how we survived in the belly of the whale. And we look at the whale, Adam, and you know, look at how much of food does a whale eat a day? Is it truly they eat a ton of krill a day, Adam?
Yes, Shepard, they do eat quite a lot. And as we mentioned, they eat krill, which is this tiny organism that probably doesn't weigh a gram each. So they probably have to eat millions of these little krill creatures to get their fill. But Allah provides for everyone, and there's enough for them to enjoy, Shepard.
I tell you, we're having a fascinating conversation with our very own Adam Kamda. But let's move on, Adam, looking at our ocean. It is a motion, there's a sardine tunes, and there's many other things that are going through people. Some are saying, I didn't get my sardines yet. Adam, you were very wise indeed when you were there at the South Coast. You had your fresh sardines. And why are people complaining, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, this year has been a little bit of a quieter sardine run. It started off around June 16th, around Father's Day. I took a drive down to Port Shepstone. On the way back, we stopped at Pumula Beach and managed to pick up a few dozen of fresh sardine from the netters. It was absolutely delicious, Shafat. And since then, the netters have been scouring the South Coast daily. They have made a few more catches. Some were quite small, some were medium-sized catches. We haven't seen that many resellers on the roads as we normally do, Shafat. So, but my advice is that if you pick up the reports of the netters active, go down to the beach and buy it from them, or ask them where they are being resold, and buy them fresh on the day, Shafat. Don't wait. Don't try and wait for the prices to come down and say I'll buy it later in the season. Every couple of years we tend to have a blank year. The last two or three years was really exceptional. So this year may count as that blank year, Shafat. But the sardines are still around. There are still huge shoals spotted off Port Edward making their way up. But it could quite easily be that the shoals will move in deeper water as they go past Durban. Up to today, the 17th of July, I haven't spotted any shoals off the Durban beach frontier, Shafat.
Now, how's your good friend Akrambai? Is it dingy or dingy working well? And he must be a bit on the, on the downside because he's not giving a report every day, Adam.
Yes, Shafat Ghulam is one of the old stalwarts of the netters. He's one of them that would be at the shoreside every single day, whereas others have other day jobs where if the sardines are not so prolific, they will continue with their day jobs. But Ghulam waits for this season every year, and if there is any chance of sardines being netted, he's usually first in line, Shafat, and he really has quite a skill and a knack of observing the ocean and identifying that there are shoals around, even if the untrained eye is looking out at sea and can't see a single thing, Shafat.
Then when you go to the fish market, you see the fishmonger and all that. But I noticed something, you'll have those names at maybe let's look at the Victoria Street Market. It's like a family thing. It runs in the family. The grandfather did it, the father did it, and then the son does it and the grandson does it. How come the fishing, this type of thing runs in the family, Adam?
Yes, Shafat, amongst fishmongers, it is a tradition to pass the business down from generation to generation. I think it also stems from, for example, you get fishing licenses that you are allowed to, you have a netting license, a shoal netting license. You have licenses to collect bait like ginger shrimp, etc. And these are very hard to come by. So these licenses are passed down from generation to generation. That's why you have grandfather, father, and son all in the same business, and as the older generation passes away, the younger they train the younger kids to come up and take over these traditions, Shafat.
Now, Adam, when you go to the butcher shop, you see the blockman at Tobela. Can you visualize this? He tell you, okay, what you want, the ribs, or you want the fillet, or you want, which one you want, you want the leg or the shoulder mutton, and so forth and so forth. But with a fishmonger, how does he slice the fish? There's only one way of doing it. Gut it and chop it, Adam.
Yes, Shafa, there's so many different ways because it depends on what you want to use your fish for. If you want it for frying, you'll slice it a little thinner, you get more cutlets out of it, and it cooks faster. If you want it for curry, then you would slice it a little thicker. Often in the fridge display, you would see fillets of hake that's completely deboned. And then even if you have a big salmon on display, it's not always possible to buy the entire salmon because it's too big for the family. So you could even choose like the cutlets from the centerpiece, or you want the tail portion, or even some of the fish like mussel cracker. You'd buy the entire head and get the butcher, the fishmonger, to slice it up so you can make a nice fish head curry, Shafar.
Absolute fish head curry. People like the mundi. Give me sheep head. What about you, Adam? Are you a big fan of sheep head or trotters?
You know, Shafat, I eat everything. I'm not a fussy eater. But when it comes to offals and head, I'm a little bit hesitant. I do eat paya. My dad loves it, and so it's usually on the table, you know, at least once a month or once in 2 months. And I indulge in paya, but as for the head and the offals, no, I think I'll give that a miss.
Hey, you're so much like me. And they say, hey, paya with the broad beans. Hey, paya with the sugar beans. How's your thing? Because I got some paya in it, and I'll just keep quiet on this hour. Adam?
Sorry, Shafar, this line is a little cracky again. I didn't quite get that. But usually when we have paya on the table, we also have makaji roti and methi soup, Shafar. So you have this broken roti in your bowl, and you add the soup onto it, and then I usually add a few spoons of the gravy from the paya curry, and it's absolutely delicious, Shafar.
No, absolutely. And Adam, perhaps looking at your recipe this morning, what do you have for us, Adam?
Yes, Shafad, we've got fried fish on mashed potato today, Shafad. So you start with 1 kg of potatoes peeled and roughly chopped, 50 grams of unsalted butter chopped, half a cup of milk, 2 tablespoons olive oil, and 200-gram firm white fish fillets, and wild rocket leaves to serve. And for the mustard butter, we'll need 120 grams of unsalted butter at room temperature, 1.5 tablespoons of mustard, 1 to 2 teaspoons of lemon juice to taste, and 1 spring onion finely chopped. And the method would be, for the mustard butter, mix all ingredients together, season with salt and pepper, and mash with a fork until well combined. Place the mixture in a sheet of plastic wrap and roll into a log shape about 2 centimeters wide. Twist the ends and chill for 20 minutes or until firm. Then remove the plastic and cut into 1 centimeter thick discs. Cook the potatoes in a large pan of boiling salted water until tender. Drain well. Return the potatoes to the pan and mash with the butter and milk. Season this to taste. Stir thoroughly through the parsley if desired. Meanwhile, heat the oil in a large frying pan over high heat. Add the fish fillets and cook for 6 minutes. Turn and cook for a further 3 minutes or until cooked through. Remove the fish and drain on paper towel. Serve the fish on the mashed potato with a couple of mustard butter rounds on top and some rocket leaves on the side. And there you have it, Shafar.